Georgia podcast. I am your host, Sarah. I know we have 4th of July coming up, so this episode is just going to be a fun one, all about industry horror stories. I'm so excited. I had a lot of people email in with their own industry horror story, and I was dying, like truly dying. There is one that is just so wild. It was so ridiculous and it sounds fake. I know this person personally. It's not a fake story. That will be the last story that I tell. I promise it is worth the wait. I told Alec I wanted to start the episode with it, but Alec read the story and he was like, no, you have to end the episode with that story. It's just that good. It is golden. Just trust me on this, okay? But they're all so good, honestly. The things that we go through in this crazy industry, my word. But yeah, I figured to just have a fun, lighthearted episode. As we approach the 4th, Alec and I are actually headed to St. George Island in Florida with Rory and Rucker for the weekend. We have some friends that are going to be there at the same time as us. I truly can't wait. St. George is our favorite place ever. Alec grew up going there all the time because his aunt and uncle have a little beach house there. And this will be our first time taking Rory, which just feels so special because so many times we would go to that beach together and be like, one day we're going to bring our kids here. And it's just wild that this will be the first time we actually do it. We have a life jacket for Rory. We have a little floaty thing for Rory. I have baby sunscreen, baby bug spray. I have little baby sunglasses for her to wear. I'm insane. I'm a psychopath. But I think it's going to be so freaking fun, okay, and special. We recently went to the lake with Alec's mom and stepdad, which was so fun and restful. The whole time I was like, am I a lake girly now? No, but really, it was so beautiful. It was Lake Martin, which is in Alabama, and I was like, this could be anywhere in the world. It's just stunning. I fell in love. I did not want to leave. Sadly, we had to leave. We also had the best food of our lives because Alec's mom is an insanely good cook. And she's actually why I started getting into cooking. So shout out Mama Amy. She listens to almost all my episodes, if not all my episodes. So thanks for the support. Love ya. Love ya, Miss Amy. Anyways, I hope today's episode makes you laugh. You can put it on while you drive on your own 4th of July road trip if you're taking one. I got so many good stories emailed to me that I decided to just split this episode into parts. So this is going to be the first part of this little series, if you want to call it a series. I don't know how many it'll end up being, but this will be the first part. Eventually, I'll have to just do another because, like I said earlier, the industry is so freaking crazy and these stories are genuinely wild, and it's sad but funny how many people had a story to share. That was insane. The stories really are just for fun because sometimes we just have to laugh at how insane this career path is, okay, instead of cry because we do enough crying. Anyways, all right, I think I said enough. I think we can begin. Okay, here we go. The first story. Important note for this story. The person who wrote it asked me to say that she is female before I begin. It's an important thing to note. Her email reads, one time I got connected to this LA manager via someone that I worked with at a restaurant. He was my manager at the restaurant but knew this guy and wanted to connect me because he knew I was looking for an agent. I got to know this man in arguably sketchy ways. He invited me to meet a partner in his management business for lunch at a restaurant I had never heard of before. I grew up in a small town and didn't have a lot of restaurant chains around. They were mostly mom and pops. So when he invited to meet me at Twin Peaks, I was like, sure, why not? So I go to Twin Peaks. Keep in mind, I am a female. And I am meeting this male who I'm already getting sketchy vibes from previous interactions. One example, the first time he wanted to meet with me was in a hotel lobby in Atlanta to see if it was worth us working together. The second time we met, another business partner was in town. I sat down with a woman. She asked me to perform monologues on the spot. I did not have a monologue ready, so I had to go around the corner, prepare an emotional monologue on the spot for her, and it all felt very odd. Third meeting, I arrived at Twin Peaks with him and was like, oh my gosh, this is not where I want to meet a manager, not very professional at all. I sit down with this guy and he has another man sit down with us. It turns out he's actually a sports agent and wants to get into representing actors. The whole time we are there, he's incredibly degrading to the female waitress, hitting on her, then makes degrading comments to me regarding my body. I was like, ooh, this is not okay. I was so done with the meeting, and it was very apparent that I was frustrated, and I politely ended the conversation early. I ended up messaging the man who invited me and was like, hey, this is not okay. And then he made the guy apologize to me, which was just very awkward and weird all around. Since then, I have obviously set clear boundaries. I don't meet up with people like that alone anymore. This was about 10 years ago, and a lot of lessons have been learned. My takeaway, if you get an icky feeling about someone, just trust the icky feeling and don't try to push through it. I haven't had any interactions with this person since, and I've very much ghosted and blocked this person on social media. That's my horror story. Thank God the industry is a bit better about all this now, so it's a lot easier to connect with and meet people virtually, so it's less necessary to meet up with people in person like it was in the old days. Whew, okay. Oh, golly. Okay, so first of all, so glad she's okay. What's so tricky about this kind of stuff is that there are not always hard and fast rules in the entertainment industry. For instance, I do know people who've had to perform monologues on the spot in agent meetings with real agents. Although I've never been asked to do it, I think it is maybe becoming more old school now to have to do that. Normally, if you make it to an agency meeting, they've already seen your work, they're ready to get to know you, and then sometimes they might still have you follow up with more footage or additional scenes to show your skills afterwards. And there are, I'm sure there are plenty of agents who do still have people perform monologues on the spot. I only say all that to say I don't blame her at all for continuing taking meetings with these people after that happened, because although it is weird, there's just so many weird things that happen, and from agent to agent, people just do things differently, and it's all so confusing and creates a lot of gray areas and leads to people getting in red flag type situations unknowingly. The hard and fast rules that there are, obviously, like rule number one, you don't pay your agent. If you get an audition, if you book the job, then you get paid eventually from production, and then the agent takes a percentage of, like it takes commission on that. They take a percentage of what you're being paid. That's how they make money. But the whole monologue on the spot thing, that's confusing because it does feel weird and very old school, but you never know. But I'm glad she's okay, because that could have turned out very badly, and the whole meeting someone in the hotel lobby, that's definitely feels sketchy. All right, I'm about to dive into our next story. So if you need to get yourself a nice refill of some coffee or whatever, go get it. Cozy up, because this next story is truly wild, okay? All right, here we go. I want to preface this one. This one is about a voiceover coach who ended up taking advantage of a lot of actors, scamming a lot of people in the industry. I do want to make it clear that the studio the coach was supposedly recommended by is a great studio, and they were fooled in this whole mess. So I won't be naming the names of the studio or of the coach, obviously, but for those of you who may catch on to who I'm referring to, just know the studio we briefly mentioned in the story is fabulous. They were bamboozled, if you will, okay? And the person who wrote the story would 100% say the same thing. All right, here we go. The subject line of this person's email reads, "This is a story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down." Fresh Prince reference. We love it. It says, "In June 2023, I found a recommended voiceover coach on a certain studio's website and booked a consultation with this person. The meeting went pretty well and I felt comfortable with them. They offered me a demo package deal, commercial and animation, all for $800. I told them I felt ready for animation, but wanted to get additional training for commercial first. We agreed we could start with animation and move on to commercial when I was ready. I paid for the entire package on June 15th, 2023, and received the finalized animation demo on December 5th, 2023. Most demos are promised within a maximum of 2 weeks. It took 6 months to receive my animation demo after my initial purchase due to many last-minute rescheduled meetings or no-shows. If I asked for edits, that was even more time added on. On June 5th, 2024, I decided to check in with them to chat about the commercial demo, but my email bounced. The website domain was also up for sale for the low price of about $4,000. After doing research, I discovered that this business announced in December 2023 that they were merging with another demo company. Then, around the same time, also announced company bankruptcy. I never received any communication about any of this and found the news through YouTube and Reddit from others who also paid her and did not receive their digital products. I have tried reaching out to them by phone, email, and text. This person finally responded to one of my texts asking me to reach out via email, but still no response to that. My bank is also unwilling to help since the transaction is a year old now. The National Association of Voice Actors is aware of the situation and are launching their own legal investigation into this and said I may not be able to use the animation demo I received. They stated I was one of around 120 people affected. Oh my gosh. Totaling around $75,000 owed from this company. They stated they had many of this person's customers come to them revealing their demos they received were either plagiarism or copies of other demos, even though we were promised original script. I am still awaiting an update on if I can use the demo I did receive. This person also did some casting on the side. I booked a voiceover gig with them in August 2023 and have yet to be paid for that. Wow. There are many in the same boat as I am, but many are worse off. This company also does a regular voiceover conference and canceled the event after many people purchased tickets for $650 each. To my knowledge, they also have not been refunded and were told their refund, quote, will be included in the bankruptcy. Good Lord. What a freaking doozy that was. Okay, here's the thing. My hope is that this coach learned from their mistakes and just will stop coaching people and do something else. I know a lot of people found out about the story because she fooled so many people, took so many people's money. So I genuinely hope she rights her wrongs and apologizes and pursues something else. But my heart goes out to everyone who was affected by this mess because it's already a hard enough career path. So to be scammed out of hundreds of dollars is just not okay. It's not okay. And I don't know how these people sleep at night. I mean, truly, this is, it grinds my gears. If you've been scammed and you are listening to this, I am so sorry. I do not know how these people sleep at night, okay? But just know you're not alone because this stuff happens all the time. And it's more, this one's crazier because she was well-respected within the voiceover community. There's some coaches that you can just tell they're scammy and they're cheesy as anything. But normally, if you're recommended like a coach by somebody, by a fabulous studio, again, they just didn't know. They were fooled too. But of course, you're going to trust that person. So, I hate this. Well, the next story is not about scamming, but rather a low-budget movie gone wrong. This person says, setting the stage. So I am in the phase of my career where I do awful movies for IMDb credit, artistic satisfaction, and networking. I did a silly rom-com movie, like Hallmark Lifetime vibes, and I worked local hire 5 hours away as a supporting role. Basically, I lost money to do this movie, but I definitely deem it worth it and would do it again. As a local hire, I was responsible for getting to and from set and my housing while there. They put the crew and the two leads up at a marina campsite place, offered us half off our stay. Full disclosure, I got paid $150 a day and paid $70-ish a night to stay at this campsite. For those of you who don't know, film is just so complicated because an indie movie can be such a wide range of what you get paid in a day. So $150 is typically the lowest you'll get paid. Anyways, just wanted to say that because it's a very wide range of what you can get paid for indie movies. And if it's non-union, they get away with more. Union has more rules of what an actor needs to be paid. All right, I digress. During the day, the little cabin thing was cute, and we were near a lake in the middle of nowhere, so it was nice to have a little getaway. I didn't get good sleep there because I'm pretty sure these cabins were haunted. Every night, around 3 a.m., I heard a sound that sounded like someone was trying to get into the cabin. It was a doorknob jiggling noise, and it lasted on and off about half an hour. I ended up getting those security rods for doors at the local Walmart. Didn't help, but made me feel safer. The last night I was there, I woke up to a cockroach caught crawling across my pillow. Awesome. We didn't know what location we were filming at until the day before sometimes, so it was hard to plan ahead. But because the crew was staying there too, I assumed this would be close to set. I filmed 4 days, and 3 of them were at a location an hour away from where this marina was. We had later shoots during these 3 faraway days too, and that meant driving back an hour on a 2-lane road in the middle of nowhere. The absolute cherry on top was the final night of shooting. I wrap at around 11 p.m., drive back an hour to the marina, and scan my key card to get into my cabin. Except my key card doesn't work, and they only gave me 1 key card. This is a tiny town and a small marina, so no one is at the front desk. I still try to call the office. Twice, no answer. I send a text just in case, too. The voicemail has a number for Debbie, the manager, in case of emergencies. I blow up Debbie's phone. No luck. Calls, voicemails, texts. I'm in tears at this point. I call and text the woman that helped me book the marina with a discount because I was with the film. Nothing. I've exhausted all options. I'm tired, hungry, and cannot get into my room. I also don't have gas in my car and am in the middle of nowhere. My sweet boyfriend ends up booking me a nearby Marriott. We love him. That's a good boyfriend. Maybe one of the only hotels in town, and staying on the phone with me for protection while I get gas and McDonald's. The next day, I wait for the marina office to open, explain the situation from the night before, and get them to make me another key card, which takes an hour. I also tell them kindly that they will be refunding me the cost of the hotel I had to book because I was locked out of my room. They tell me Debbie is the one that can approve that. I tell them Debbie has a few voicemails of me crying at 11 p.m. and I haven't heard back from her, so I'm not sure how reliable Debbie is, okay? I end up getting my key, grabbing my stuff, and hitting the road. I'm promised that Debbie is going to get me my refund, and it hasn't happened for a few days after I returned. So I take matters into my own hands. I have no other option. So I leave a 1-star Google review and explain the story really kindly, and you should know I really only have 5-star reviews of places on Google. Almost immediately after I posted the 1-star review, I heard from Debbie and got my money back. Interesting how that happens. I took down the 1-star review later. I will never stay at that place again. But I would absolutely do another movie like that again in a heartbeat. Worth it. Ha ha, am I insane? Oh, I love how that ended. I love the ending of that. No, you're not insane, girl. You are just an actor doing her thing, grinding to build up those credits, baby girl. And also, just so you know, I would have been spiraling. I would have panicked. I would not have been okay. I don't trust easy. I have trust issues. So if I'm just trying to imagine myself in this scenario. If I had to get gas in a small town at 11 p.m. because I was locked out of my sketchy marina that I also think is haunted. No thanks. Good Lord. Glad you're okay. Non-union films are just something else, aren't they? Anyways, all right. The next story is briefer than the others, but it does have to deal with body image talk, so just letting you know. Important note for this one. This acting teacher is a male. They said. One story that comes to mind was a classic weight-shaming story. I was in an acting class with a very respected teacher. I did a scene from Stop Kiss by Diana Sawin, and in the scene, I asked to borrow my scene partner's dress. My scene partner was a very tall, thin model type, but it didn't matter since I never actually had to put the dress on. When we finished the scene, the teacher, again, he's the male acting teacher, The teacher's only comment was, quote, "I just don't believe that you could fit into that dress." I'm giving him a very douchey voice. And I was like, okay. I didn't know what to say. He repeated it and said, "Do you think you could fit into that dress?" I was dumbfounded. What in the world does me fitting into this dress have to do with the scene or the acting? Sounds like bad casting on his part, if anything. I think I mumbled something about the dress being stretchy and then sat down in shame. I'd like to think that I'd handle things differently if this happened to me today. Ooh, I'm so sorry that happened to you. Truly, people like this have to be so deeply insecure themselves. They just want everyone around them to suffer. So really, it's just sad and unfortunate for them. And hopefully other people noticed it and stopped taking class with this, quote, respected teacher. That's all I'm going to say before I get too sassy, because this stuff really fires me up. So I'm sorry that you experienced that. An acting teacher should always create a safe space. I digress. All right, guys. You waited for it. You're going to want to buckle up. If you're cozying up with these stories, get yourself another refill. I don't know. You just got a refill earlier, so you don't need one. Get some popcorn. Kick back. This is the finale. Buckle up, Buttercup. The wildest story yet. Important note for this story. I try not to let these episodes get too mature because I do have a wide age range of my audience listeners. So some details, really just one detail, I won't read aloud. But just know this is more of a mature story, if you will. Alec and I, though, we were dying. We were truly dying. And I just, again, I know this person personally, so it's a real story. And this the person who wrote it is a male, okay? Which is kind of important to note. It's still crazy. You'll see. Okay, anyways, I'll start. The email reads, "So I made it to a final callback round for a Western film written and directed by a guy named Paul McCarthy, an experimental performance artist and sculptor turned filmmaker. He's most known for collaborating with James Franco and for being hired to install a Christmas tree sculpture in Paris and installing a massive Christmas green tree shaped exactly like a," and that's where I won't say the word. And it's not actually the word you think it's going to be. It's a different mature thing. Well, anyways, okay, that's all. Moving on. "A very talented but obviously boundary-pushing artist. For the callback location, we were called, not emailed, cryptically over the phone last minute to give the address. I arrived along with 10 other guys at this nondescript warehouse. We were led up to a hallway upstairs, which overlooked this extensive sculpture operation. His statues are very large in nature. Among the statues were large set pieces of the Western film. The roles being cast were for a very violent gang of criminals that roam the desert called the Dogs. We knew that 8 of the 10 of us were being cast. We all had vastly different looks, sizes, etc. So there was a camaraderie, but also a strong air of who's not going to make it. The whole process was very free-flowing and organic, no real script to follow. Initially, we were called in for a big group audition. The director, a portly man with long gray hair and beard, had himself tied to a chair with a blonde wig on his head. I'm going to read that sentence again in case you missed it. Initially, we were called in for a big group audition. The director, a portly man with long gray hair and beard, had himself tied to a chair with a blonde wig on his head. Soon as we walked in, he started screaming, and it was our job to start working in tandem to scare, torture, and insult this, quote, woman. They wanted to see how mean and threatening we could be, to really push limits and say the most insulting things we could think of. All the while, Paul is wailing and crying. Later, we were brought in one by one. We were told that when the Dogs went on their raids, they would often do it naked. And before we did the next part, he wanted me to agree to being in the desert naked for long, grueling shoots. I agreed. I really liked what this guy was doing. I'm always looking to push my own limits as a performer. Plus, I've gone fully nude in live theater before, so this wasn't necessarily new. Plus, it was a 30-day shoot and paid $1,000 a day. At that time, I couldn't fathom walking away with 30K after spending a summer in the desert. I still can't. It would be a life-changing opportunity and paycheck, and I was ready to do whatever it took to get it, especially since the odds were heavily in my favor. We went in. The direction was to strip down fully nude and rage around the room like an angry dog, while a guy followed me around with a camera. So there I was, in a big, empty, white room, he attached a picture to the email, crawling on all fours, full of spit and rage, barking and yelling and foaming at the mouth. While I did this, he turned the tables and started insulting me, personal attacks, anything he could think of to say to make me mad. After that, I put my clothes on and left the room, and an assistant told me I'd hear back if I was cast. I never heard back. I guess I was one of the two who didn't have that dog in them, or God knows whatever other reason. That was around 2015. For years, I looked for evidence of the film's existence and never found anything. When you asked me about the story, I realized I hadn't really thought about it in a long time. McCarthy had finally released his film in 2019 as a Western anthology called Coach Stage Stagecoach. And to be fair, I don't know if that was a typo, if it was just supposed to be Coach Stage or Stagecoach, but he wrote Coach Stage Stagecoach. With a recent installment called The Dog's Attack, released in 2023. I don't know if the dogs appear in the recent installment or if they've been there since 2019. Either way, there's a world in which I booked this part and my broke 20-something self is preserved in time as a wild, naked phantom of the desert, which gets released nearly 10 years after I filmed it. But in this world, I didn't get the part. I don't have any of that big paycheck or what would have come after. I don't have inevitable scars from nude, violent fight scenes in the middle of the desert night. But what I do have is the knowledge that on some hard drive somewhere out there is footage of me, naked as the day I was born, crawling around attempting to channel the apparently inadequate spirit of a rabid dog. I just had to end the episode on that story. What a freaking wild ride that was. I have no comments. It's self-explanatory. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If you liked it, please share and tag the pod on Instagram at the Stay at Home Actor Pod. I love it when people tell me that they're listening. It actually makes my whole day and keeps me doing this thing. Honestly, it encourages me to keep going. Feel free to email the podcast at stayathomeactorpod@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, it would make a massive difference if you took 30 seconds to rate and review the pod on Apple or Spotify. This is the best way to help support newer podcasters to help them grow and would mean the absolute world to me. That would be amazing. And I think that's everything. I hope you enjoyed. This was a shorter episode. I hope it brought you some giggles. This is what a freaking weird industry this is. All right. Hey, thanks for listening, and I will see you next time. Thank you.